Dr. Louise Floyd, Associate Professor at the JCU School of Law, joins me now to discuss this and more. Good morning, Doctor.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. I guess a good first question to ask is, how is the workforce changing through the presence of robotics, and how is it going to define the gig economy in a globalised workforce?
Well, what we know so far is that more jobs than we probably expected to be affected by technology are being affected by technology. So, you know, it's not just on a production line, but artificial intelligence is actually having uses in some white-collar areas, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a fairly significant impact for all sectors of the society. But having said that, though, you'll always need people. So that's the good news story for us.
Yeah, right. Well, you did mention production there. So I guess how are automation and robotics impacting on the current laws surrounding employment in the workforce?
Well, I think there are two issues. One is the one that you've raised, which is how do we deal at the minute with change that's going on? The second broader issue is in the long term, you know, when we really see all of these changes come to fruition and have a truly new economy, what does the law do then? For the immediate question you've asked, which is like, what can labour law do at the moment? There are quite a number of things that you can do. In terms of if a business is restructuring and there were redundancies, we obviously have well-developed redundancy laws, but you can always add to those sorts of discussions and add to that regulation and look at particular groups who might be affected. So, for instance, you know, if you've got people who are maybe older workers who may well be less in a position to retrain, you know, can there be special measures put in place? Can people, you know, perhaps underscore the need for anti-discrimination against the older workforce and support them and, you know, help them as they try to find a new pathway forward and new work? Likewise, when you deal with the participants in these discussions, this country has long had a system of industrial democracy, the idea that workers, you know, can have a voice in the workplace and their employers and stakeholders. But I guess what you'd probably need to add into that to a bigger extent maybe than some people have done to this point is have a discussion group around technological change. And, you know, not just in a context of redundancy, but, you know, in the way workplaces shape themselves, always have a dialogue about what is the technological change in prospect and how do we go about incorporating that.
Yeah, right. Very important issues that would come up in a lot of discussions. And we have, it seems, increased our discussions surrounding automation and its impact on employment outcomes recently. So why has that happened, given that automation has been around in the workforce for quite a while?
Well, I think it's the level of it. So it's now increasingly automated. So you get some industries now, such as mining, where you see these documentaries where you've got huge machines that are actually moving about through a control room. So the spread of it's increased. But also it gets back to that point you and I discussed at the start of this interview, which is probably the uses are more subtle than people realised and more diverse. So, for instance, you know, in white-collar jobs, it may well be that you can have robots that have got all computer programs and algorithms that have like an impact on the workplace that maybe they haven't, you know, had a role for previously. So they're more subtle, they're more sophisticated.
Right. So do you believe that this is more likely to affect certain industries more than others? Because you did mention it's got to affect most industries, but what ones will be the main ones under the gun?
Well, nobody can really say that one for sure, because every day there are new technologies, every day there are new developments. And if you look at the, you know, if you listen to the captains of industry when they're interviewed, they'll say quite rightfully and quite humbly, nobody really has the crystal ball to say for sure, and probably some jobs of the future we can't even envisage now. So there's no really precise answer to that. But I think the best that we can do, you know, as a society, but also looking at the role of law, is just to be cognizant of the fact that we must adapt and we must be adaptable and appreciate that there will be ongoing change. And that sort of a conversation can take place in many realms in the education sector. It's by, you know, making sure that there are digital literacies. So yes, no maths, yes, no the language, but also, you know, educate people to a greater extent on the role of technology and how they can use it and be familiar with it and use it as a string to their bow. And likewise, as you and I said a little while ago, in workplaces, don't have like a us-them attitude, but be collaborative, sit around the table, and if employers become aware of technology that could be used in the workplace, be open about it, talk to the work, you know, to the workforce about it, talk about its uses, because a lot of the time technology can actually aid the quality of a person's life, so it's not necessarily an enemy as such, it can be our friend, but I think it largely depends on being open and having a two-way dialogue.
Yeah, definitely. Because the big thing that you just said then, Doctor, was about being open and adaptable, because there is quite a sense of negativity when people hear the words automation and robots and the changes that they might bring to employment outcomes. How optimistic are you about the automated future and its presence in the workforce?
I'm a very optimistic person about most things, but I'm optimistic about this as well.
Oh, that's
so
good.
I think that, you know, nobody obviously can ever guarantee the outcome of any change in life. And to some extent, what we're all living through at the moment is very rightly being likened to the Industrial Revolution, when machines, as opposed to like hand labour, was the revolution. Now we're going from machines to, you know, artificial intelligence. But, you know, society and human beings have a great potential to adapt. And also Australia is a smart country, so I've got absolutely no doubt that, you know, there'll be really strong positives that come out of this change. But I do think the really big ingredients in that, though, are adaptability, openness, and also just remembering who we are as a country and not leaving people behind. And so I guess what I would, you know, like to see, it goes back to what we said earlier, look into the future, train, you know, people, particularly younger people, with a variety of skills, embrace concepts like lifelong learning, so that if a person does lose their job and have to reskill, remember there's no stigma attached to that. It's part of the modern world in which we live in. Support that, nurture that, you know, champion that. So lifelong learning, adaptability, but also for people who are like dealing with this issue now, like I said before, have conversations about, well, we're thinking of introducing this, what input do you have? Or we're thinking of introducing this, how can this to be everybody's mutual benefit? Or if somebody is unfortunate and is made redundant and they're an older worker, well, how can society and how can laws support them? And it gets back to what I was saying too before about, you know, remembering we do have age discrimination laws in this country. So, you know, don't think, oh, a person's over 50. Think, well, a person's got a great deal of experience. How can we use that for our advantage?
It's definitely going to be a very interesting couple of years or even decades as this stuff becomes to the forefront. You mentioned digital literacy before and a few other things a few things you just spoke about just then. How can people adapt and acquire new skills to be a part of a workforce that will be governed by technology?
Well, I think it starts early. So, you know, when you look at the curriculums of a lot of high schools, it's amazing how they adapt and evolve. And so whether that's from being cognizant of what other systems of education do in different countries, upskilling people with, you know, cultural education, but also the skills that they can teach at all levels of education. So basically for digital literacies, I think start early. And never substitute your basic understandings of the real, you know, rocks on which we've built education, understanding the language and you know, literacy for language and for maths, but adding to that with a greater understanding of the role of computers in society, the technological developments that are available and how people can use that. So I would see, the short answer to your question, I would see, you know, in all levels of education, people introducing a greater understanding of technological change, when people are in the workforce too, and they enterprise bargain as a group, you know, what about things like, you know, openness and a dialogue of technological change? What about things like, you know, if they can't, you know, get a pay rise, can they perhaps be educated in these changes to give them a stronger skill set and therefore place them in a better position to keep a job? You know, there are all sorts of things that you can do as part of lifelong learning. So that's what I would say, that digital literacy and lifelong learning probably go hand in hand, and they're an important thing for us to consider.
Very, a lot of things definitely to consider, and education, I guess, will be a massive one that will come into play in the next couple of years as this stuff becomes the forefront of the digital age. Thank you so much, Doctor, for talking to us this morning.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.